You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to our second episode with Rob Bean. I'm just going to dive right in. I'm going to read the same bio that we read to you guys last week, but then we're just going to dive in because this episode is actually all about him. So Rob is a 53. He almost gave you like a couple of years there. A 53-year-old man on the spectrum with experience with Pans Pandas through his two kids and wife. He is intellectually curious and loves learning things on a variety of topics. He's an avid sports fan, go Lakers and Rams, and enjoys coaching his kids now that they are involved in sports competition. During COVID, he rekindled his interest in sports cards and now continues that hobby with the hopes of it actually turning into a viable side hustle for when he retires. So he's got plans, you know. Rob, we were so lucky to have you to talk to us last week about your experience with Pans Pandas in your family. We touched on a lot of this already because of the fact that it, you know, like your life and your personal experience obviously influences things with how you relate to your kids, how you relate to your family and everything. But I'm just so grateful that you're willing to join us today to talk about your personal experience as somebody who's on the spectrum and who's used homeopathy. So welcome. Thank you for coming back and being willing to talk more.
Thanks for having me back.
All right, Rob, let's just dive right in. Tell us like what it was like growing up, what life was like for you.
You know, it's in hindsight, there's a lot of interesting things to point to. You know, being the age that I am, I was born in 1971, you know, was school age, mid 70s through, you know, the 80s kind of thing. And you know, you heard about autism and stuff like that back then, but I think it was really just the more severe cases and there wasn't a lot of nuance and stuff there. So I never even heard the term applied to me until, you know, just years ago. And then after kind of going through a journey of discovery with, you know, coming to grips with that, this is probably explains exactly, you know, who I am and what I am as far as that kind of stuff goes, you know, it unlocked a lot of doors, a lot of treasure chests and different things from my life and from the past. And a lot of things became a lot more clear and came into focus, you know, looking back. I mean, I think I mentioned in the last week's podcast that, you know, I didn't even talk until I was three.
Yeah.
My family, to the best of my knowledge and like the stories that I've heard, that they didn't think too much of it. You know, it was just one of those, he'll talk when he wants to, you know. I showed a certain level of intelligence and things like that. So I think they knew that it wasn't a disability of some type in that regard, but it was just one of those, he's not ready to talk yet. Where today, I think, you know, I wouldn't even gotten halfway to that point.
Yeah.
You know, in today's world, without some alarm bells going off for most parents. So it was just a different thing. And then, you know, growing up, you know, I am in a unique, I think a somewhat unique position in that I am just enough on the spectrum to be different, but also very camouflaged, you know, out in the world. I think probably if you were to interview people that I've known or worked with or even been friends with for periods of time and went back and told them that I was on the spectrum, they probably would have told you were crazy or I never saw any signs of that. So it was one of those things where down deep, I think I knew that I was, I'm gonna say a little bit different, a little bit unique, because the way I looked at things, the way I thought about things, and all that kind of stuff always seemed to be just askew from what maybe like the consensus, you know, thoughts, feelings, and perspectives were from a lot of the people that I interacted with, right? Which gave me, in certain ways, it gave me some nice skills. Like I was able to look at things from much different angles than a lot of my peers, which carried a lot of benefits. It helped me in a lot of ways, being able to, you know, I was always good with numbers. Math was one of my best subjects. Being able to see patterns and different things like that, that maybe the average person doesn't pick up on, you know, would give me certain insights into things, or the ability to comment on something from a different angle than the rest of the room and that type of thing. So it did have some benefits, but, you know, there was times where I know that it caused me some social situations that, you know, maybe bordered on embarrassing or just awkward or even just like bewildering or confusing for me and that type of thing too. So yeah, it was certainly different. I could probably, if I thought long and hard enough, come up with a bunch of different like little miniature stories of incidents that happened that were for sure colored, you know, through my, you know, through my autism.
Yeah. It's one of those things that when you can look back in retrospect, it changes things, but it's also hard to necessarily remember some of those things because, I mean, especially if you didn't have an understanding for why you were having some hard things, they sometimes just feel really hard, and we don't always want to remember like the hard stuff that's like little hard, not big hard. Like the big hard stuff tends to stick with us, but like the little hard that we don't have an understanding for, is it's a little bit hard to recall.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're absolutely right. I'm sure there is, you know, literally probably hundreds or thousands of these little tiny blips that, you know, over the course of a lifetime of living with it, you know, you develop, you know, coping mechanisms, you develop tools, you develop masks that you wear in certain situations. You know, type of thing to, you know, more easily navigate through life and the dynamics of interpersonal relationships and, you know, being an employee of a, you know, and working with coworkers or, you know, whatever, being a classmate, being whatever it is, fill in the blank. But, you know, all the stuff that I think a lot of people, you know, maybe take for granted and don't even think about, like breathing, you know, sometimes took strategy on my part, thought processes, unseen struggles to make it through something that everybody else seemed to be gliding through. And I needed to, you know, maybe double down a little bit on whatever it was to make sure that I got it done or was doing it to the same level as everybody else type of thing.
Yeah.
But after a while, yeah, that just becomes second nature. You know, it's not even a thought process. It wasn't like I was having conversations with people about, you know, neurodiversity versus neurotypical and stuff. We weren't comparing notes on, hey, so how did you think about that situation when that happened? You know, that just wasn't happening.
It's like an after the fact, like once you actually have an understanding of things, then you can go back and be like, wait a minute, how did you think about this? Like, what did your brain do in this situation? Yeah. Then you can really start to see the differences.
And it's ironic too, because now that the diagnosis is out there, and now that I have Lori, who, you know, I'm obviously closer to and more, you know, emotionally and psychologically intimate with than anybody I've ever had in my entire life. Mm-hmm. It's a great opportunity. We talk all the time about, so what did you, you know, when you did that, what were you thinking? Like what, because a lot of times our thinking, you know, is just so polar opposite on things that I'll do something that'll be bewildering for her or make it look, in at least from her perspective, that I did it without a plan or without thinking or whatever, where I actually did have a plan and did have a thought process, but it was just so
different from hers.
So different from hers that it was hard for her to comprehend, like how I could come to the conclusions that I did or come to the end result that I did or whatever techniques I chose to use or methodology or whatever it was, that I have to explain it to her. And then she might not agree with it or be like, you know, I wouldn't have done it like that. But now she's got so much of a better understanding from that, of knowing that so much of what I do does have thought, does have a plan, does have a strategy. It's just something that a lot of times is just so vastly different from hers that now she can at least comprehend that I'm not doing things mindlessly or, you know, lazily or, you know, whatever it is, apathetically or anything mm-hmm. like that, that there's more to it than that. It's just so foreign to her that she never yeah. really thought of that on her own. So we have, I mean, we have those conversations all the time, and she'll ask my opinion about stuff or what do you think about this? Because oftentimes, yeah, I'm able to talk about things or frame things or whatever in a way that she wouldn't think of or wouldn't do. And I think I've been able to help her like maybe understand things a little bit better by giving her these other, mm-hmm. other.
There's value to all of the ways that we relate to things. Like, you know, like the way that I see the world versus the way my husband sees the world is exactly opposite. It's very, very different. And there is value in both of them. And we get to better solutions when we're actually working together. So I'm curious, you know, since this wasn't something that was on the radar for, mm-hmm. I mean, like all of us, we were all born in the 70s, not to call Jody and I out with our age, but we called it out a little bit last week. So we were all born in the 70s. We're a little bit later in the 70s from you, but was not really on the radar. And like you said, except for people who had like really severe cases. So at what point did you start to suspect that you might be on the spectrum? And how did you go about getting a diagnosis? I'm pretty sure you haven't maybe not gotten an official diagnosis, but once you said, so how did you first start to suspect? And then what did you do about it?
Well, I mean, I think like really, really actually like talking about it and looking at it, you know, was probably, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you know, right before I started the homeopathy journey. Because one led into the other, right? Once we were able to put kind of a name to it and start to kind of coalesce what was happening into some more tangible symptoms and things in the homeopathy world, you know, I was able to start the homeopathy program, and, you know, it's been a huge blessing. But yeah, I mean, probably at this point now, probably 6 years ago, something mm-hmm. like that.
So it's about 6 years ago. Was there anything in particular though that made you start to think like what was it that was like the precipitating factor or the triggering factor
that sent me down that path?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be honest, a big part of it was, you know, things, my marriage with Lori and stuff was coming to a head. You know what I mean? It was without the awareness and without the knowledge and without the understanding that the diagnosis eventually brought, you know, there was a lot of bumps, a mm-hmm. lot of bumps. And there were some times that we were on the ropes pretty good, you know, and she didn't understand me. I didn't understand us and what was going on and what it meant to be, you know, to be a partner and a husband and all the kind of things in the way that I needed to be. And mm-hmm. so that was a huge learning journey that came along with it. And the diagnosis certainly helped, because before I was just kind of flailing in the dark, trying to figure it out, right? And that was hard enough. I mean, it was hard enough after the diagnosis, even with all that came with it, you know, of understanding and things, to figure out how to not rewire my brain, but retrain it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To train it to kind of build a bridge between, you know, where, like, for lack of a better term, where like my pure self was mm-hmm. to where I needed to be a functioning partner, dad, and all those, you know, husband, dad, and all those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
Because living in a like a pure autism state makes it really tough to be all that you need to be a husband and a dad and all that kind of stuff. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I think one of the things that was so rough early on, and that is, I think, oftentimes misinterpreted with autistic people, is that they are self-absorbed, selfish, mm-hmm. and those types of things, because they are so like inwardly focused a lot mm-hmm. of the times, or very like very laser focused on things, certain things mm-hmm. to the detriment of maybe other things around mm-hmm. them, you know, being very like have to do things a certain way and have to, like, no matter what the circumstances are, have to complete something, even if it's detrimental to keep going, you know what I mean? Or not appropriate for the whatever, you know, the situation anymore. Like Lori would say, living in a vacuum, essentially, yeah. Where right decision, but bad choice to go with that right now because we're in the middle of X, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or what have you, like reading the room and realizing that, you know, spending the next 3 hours organizing, you know, the junk drawer when, you know, the kids are running around going crazy and whatever, the house is a mess and we got errands to run and stuff, is not the best plan, even if my brain wants me to like stay on that target and see it all the way to the end, no matter how long it takes. So that's a long-winded way of saying I had to figure out how to exist in a neurotypical world while still saying staying somewhat true to my essence, mm-hmm. who I am,
yeah,
but not letting that completely override the tools and the lessons that I needed to learn to be able to be functional.
So it sounds to me, from the way you're describing it, that Lori is the one who brought this to your attention.
Well, I think, you know, Lori's a person who strives to fix things. She strives to make things better. She is looking for answers and looking to help people. That's one of my favorite attributes about her.
Oh yeah, she's amazing.
And it's a testament to, I think, to my stubbornness and hard-headedness that I wouldn't, no matter how difficult it got, I would just put my head down and just keep going into the relationship. And for her, the diagnosis was huge because it helped her finally get some answers and alleviate and pull the curtain back on so much of the confusion that she had about, you know, the dichotomy that she saw in me, in that she knew that I was a good person and was well-intentioned and never had ill will towards anyone or anything, you know, for the most part. But then the outward actions or lack thereof or what have you seem to be in oftentimes in direct contradiction to that.
Yeah. It's almost like you had some gifts that were given to you. I'm guessing that in part because this all came about after you were understanding that your children had PANs and pandas. Mm-hmm. And so I'm guessing because there is so much overlap between PANs and pandas that Lori got a better understanding of autism and started to see more of you. So there's both, it sounds like you got both the gift of having to be confronted with PANs and pandas in your family. And that probably, from what you shared last week, brought more of the conflict that was happening because of your differences of how you relate to the world, even more to the forefront. And then because of the research that Lori was also able to get the understanding of like this framework and conceptualization for you. So like, it's almost like all of this really difficult stuff that happened in your life gave you this gift of understanding yourself better that was able to bring you more solutions. Because as you said, like you've figured out what's going on and recognizing, it sounds like in many ways, recognizing that it's not necessarily you that's the problem, but that the ways you relate to the world differently than others has contributed to problems and having a better understanding of those things. And then we'll talk about all the ways homeopathy has also contributed to that, because I know that's been a big factor for you. But that really helped to, cross some bridges for you guys. Is that accurate?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on there. Lori began this journey of discovery with the kids, you know, and PANs and pandas, you know, to find answers and to, you know, get healing done for her. And I think I just kind of was a bonus in there, you know, and that whole process opened her up, like you said, to being inquisitive about my situation and doing the research there and tying it in to the pandas and everything that we were doing with the girls, and knowing that a big part of it was the understanding that I needed to hop on board and do my own healing, or else the three of them were going to leave me behind, you know, and that I wasn't going to be able to stand still while they were moving forward. You know, I mean, the girls with their pans and pandas, you know, Lori with her background with trichotillomania and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we all came from somewhat broken places in a certain way. And so I think that helped too. Like Lori having her own stuff, I think gave her the ability to give me more grace with my stuff than maybe someone else might have. Knowing her own struggles and being able to say, you know, Rob's got this and it's different, but it's causing him to have struggles too. So, you know, I don't want to speak for her, but I would think that she would say that, you know, that allowed her the patience and the understanding, the compassion to, you know, to stay with it longer than maybe others would have.
How long, or I'm sorry, how soon after recognizing autism in yourself did you start homeopathy?
It was pretty quick. Yeah. It was pretty quick. I mean, I think it would have eventually maybe gotten there anyway, because I think Lori back then and certainly me now too, believe that homeopathy is so versatile and has so many potential benefits for so many different things. That we would have maybe eventually landed on how to incorporate homeopathy into my situation, no matter whether the diagnosis happened or not. But it certainly accelerated it, because once we had a diagnosis and a more clear path in front of us as to what we were dealing with, that made tying in the homeopathy even easier, because we were in a lane. Right. We weren't just swerving all over the road anymore. We were in a lane, and it gave us some structure and some more concrete ideas about what was happening, what maybe some of the pitfalls were that came along with it, and how homeopathy could step in and, you know, be a support mechanism for me.
Yeah. I wanted to get to all of the ways that homeopathy has helped you, because I know I just have to share, there was, one of the reasons we're here talking is that Lori shared on one of our Facebook group that we have, where people can share a lot of their victories and everything. We've got like posts where people can go, because people just love to have the opportunity to celebrate, right? And one of them that she shared was about you. She shares like victories of yours fairly often, but one of them she shared was that you had made some sort of comment about, if anybody didn't believe that homeopathy was effective, that they should just come and talk to you, because you had all sorts of things that you could share about just how dramatic of an impact it can have. So I want to dive into all of that in detail here in a minute. But before we do that, I'm just curious if there's any other therapies that you have used to help support you along with navigating life with this new understanding and framework for yourself.
Well, you know, I think I mentioned it in the podcast last week too. You know, I do see a therapist on a regular basis. You know, I'm fortunate to be to the point now where we're spacing those out even more than we ever have. You know, from an appointment standpoint, you know, now once a month, where, you know, in the beginning we were once a week. And then on the occasional time when we were in crisis mode, I might even sneak in, you know, another emergency, you know, visit when things were going really badly. So, you know, now it's to the point where half the time I'm like, what am I going to talk about? Where before would have been like, am I going to have enough time to talk about everything I need to talk about? So it's certainly gone a long way. But, you know, I would say my therapist was a big contributor to helping get to the point of a diagnosis and a clear cut. And so I've worked with her, you know, in relation to, navigating the world and relationships and everything in that way. But I mean, it's really been that and homeopathy have been the two real main things that I've done.
So it was your therapist did actually confirm the diagnosis. Is that
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we've never done any, I didn't take any kind of an official
like
test or
testing?
whatever, but I think even before we really started talking about it openly, I think she had her suspicions. And I know now she treats a couple other people on the spectrum. So I think she's probably got a pretty good idea of what she's looking for and what are some of the telltale signs and all that. But yeah, once it was out in the open, we really that became a huge focus. And we looked at things through that lens quite a bit, right? Because of how, when your brain's wired a certain way, it's hard not to connect just about anything that you do, say, or feel to, and not have it, not assume that it's gone through the lens of autism, right? Because unless there's some crazy back door it's sneaking out of, like that is a part of the framework of your brain. You know what I mean? There's hard, you can't really get around it.
Well, let's dive into the good stuff. Tell us all about how homeopathy has helped you.
Well, I mean, it's hard to put into words like how improved my life has been since starting the homeopathy. A lot of times in the early days, it wasn't just the different ways that I thought about things, but it was also how taxing living in a neurotypical world is for someone that's neurodiverse. They talk about, you read all the time about, extroverts versus introverts and how for introverts, well, for extroverts, they get energized by being around people and socializing and things, where for the introverts, it's the complete opposite. They can socialize and they can do all those things, but to recharge their batteries, they need to do the exact opposite. And so in a way, before I even knew about the autism part, I knew that I was in the introvert bucket, that was, I could do a lot of things, but depending on how long it was and how intense it was from a social standpoint or what have you, I needed the antithesis of that to be able to get myself back above, above the waterline, right? A weekend day with friends all day out doing things, going out for drinks, having dinner, doing whatever was great, but I would need that next day and maybe part of another day to really get myself back
Did
to.
homeopathy, I'm guessing, didn't really change that for you though, right? Because like I always say that homeopathy won't change the way someone is wired. So it's not going to take somebody who's on the spectrum and change the way that they relate to the world, but it can change the way that they suffer because of those things. Same thing with like introversion or extroversion. It's not going to change whether somebody's an introvert or an extrovert.
That's still the way I'm wired, but I'd say that homeopathy, along with other like tools that I've developed with my therapist, things like that, have given me the ability to weather that storm better, faster. I now, I can weather a lot more without having to need that type of, antithetical response. And if I do, it's not nearly as, I don't need as much or as long of a recovery time. And part of it is, the self-awareness that comes with knowing when I'm tiptoeing up to the edge, knowing when I need to, tap out of something and be like, I need to go take a break. You know what I mean? Instead of just, blindly trying to push through things. But a big part of my dynamic with my family and everything is the fact that I've had to figure out how to do it without having the ability to take those big long breaks. And it's like been a muscle that I've had. I started, I was the weakling at the beach getting sand kicked on him in the beginning. And then worked out that muscle enough to where now, you know, now I can hang out with the guys at Muscle Beach a little bit. You know what I mean? As far as being able to be so much stronger and capable of weathering the, you know, because for me, the world's like the tide, like the waves just keep coming, right? And unless I'm going to go completely like up into a cabin in the woods or something by myself, they're going to, it's going to keep coming. I have to, I live in a world, in a community and in a family, and I have coworkers and a job and all that kind of stuff. So being able to, you know, hold out longer and not just in a like grit bear it kind of way, but in a, I'm powering through it in a healthy, solid way.
So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you some specifics because like I'm understanding that you're getting some, you've got the ability to withstand more, but I'm, I know that there's going to be people, especially parents of kids who are on the spectrum, who've going to, are going to have some questions about like, you know, what it really looks like. So like pre-homeopathy and post-homeopathy. So I am going to get down and ask you a couple of specific questions about like, if you experience this and how homeopathy has helped. And I'm sure Jody's got several that she wants to ask too, just from what we see in our community with parents wondering about how homeopathy is likely to help with this for kids who are on the spectrum. But I'm curious first, if there is like, if there is a clear difference. So like, let's say before homeopathy, before all of your, everything you've been through over the last couple of years using homeopathy, and you built up these muscles, right? What would it have looked like before in your home? Like, let's give the example that you used earlier where something's going on with the kids, there's things going on and you are wanting to organize the drawer, the junk drawer. What would have looked like if Lori had interrupted you before, and what does it look like now?
So the first thing that comes to mind is irritability.
Okay.
Before, it would have been a much, I would have been much more put off and irritable and in a lot of cases, angry about it. The fact that that stuff was happening, the fact that I couldn't do what I was, my brain was dead set on doing, and it was so much more black and white thinking, you know? So yeah, I'd be irritable. I'd lash out. I'd turn in on myself and that type of thing. I wouldn't be present. You know, it could be either one of those types of thing, either one of those things. Which would make it extremely hard for Lori and the kids to navigate me. Because I think back then, I think whether they were consciously thinking it or not, they thought of me as kind of a ticking time bomb. Like we can't, what if we say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, or it goes a certain way, you know, I could go off the rails. I could, just I was angry a lot more.
Yeah.
And irritable a lot more.
Yeah. And now, what's it like now?
Now, you know, I'm human, so I still, you know, that still happens from time to time, but I'm in such a more grounded place now. And I'm so much more attuned to who I am. And I've spent a lot of time working on tools and different things. And so much of it is a mindset change too, you know? It's not like the stimuli that would have caused it before isn't happening anymore. I think all of us in the family are in better shape than we were back then too. So maybe less frequently, but it's not like that kind of stuff doesn't happen anymore. But I'm just able to shrug it off and to, you know, move through it just so much easier now. I make conscious choices to not be angry and to not, you know, in the beginning, it was very conscious. I had to like, okay, this is happening. I'm going to find a way to not let it do this to me. And now I don't have to do that nearly as much because, like I said, I've worked that muscle. It's more intuitive now, or just more kind of an automatic response. I've retrained myself, I think, in a lot of ways to respond to that stuff differently.
So we hear from a lot of parents of kids who have autism that irritability or rage and anger is one of the primary things, as we all know, right? And it's lots of things contribute to that, right? Physical sensations contribute to that, overstimulation contribute to that. Having things disrupted that they're like that they're on the path for can contribute to it. Just various different things. So it sounds like homeopathy first gave you the ability to choose not to, and then helped make that, to take it one step further, where you both have the choice and that the choice is easier. And that sometimes you don't even have to make the choice because it's created the pathway that you're still aware of. This thing is different than what I want to do, and this is hard for me, and that you're just not getting as irritable. So it's like the irritability threshold is much higher, and you have the capacity to make a choice once that threshold is crossed.
Yeah, because the another part of the homeopathy has been to clear my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm struggling, or you know, when I hit a certain spot where I know we need to either, you know, move up in potency or even change the remedy altogether, is I get molasses brain a lot of the time.
Okay.
And it's like sloshing through molasses or mud or something, trying to think through things and navigate things and understand things and everything. And it used to be where it was kind of a self-perpetuating situation where it got rough. So I'd have molasses brain, which would make it even harder for me to try to figure things out, which would then cause things to steam, you know, to snowball a little bit more. And that's one thing that the homeopathy has done, is definitely give me a lot. That's one of the things I certainly keep track of, and is one of the things that I track for how I'm doing, and do I need to take my next dose or whatever, is am I still thinking clearly? Am I still feeling grounded? Am I in what we would tell the girls, are you in wise mind or not? Right?
Yep.
Like, are you in a, you know, emotional panic mind, or are you in wise mind? Because only when you're in wise mind, you're going to make good choices.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're not, you're going to have a tendency to make some bad ones, you know, I mean, and put yourself in rough shape. So, you know, am I feeling like I'm in wise mind? Am I grounded? Do I have a level of clarity that will allow me to see the world and respond to it consciously instead of reactively?
I've had some clients in the past that are on the spectrum, and we have called it rock brain or sludge brain or things like that, where it's just the
same thing. Molasses is the word that I came up with, but I think that all applies,
where it's just really hard to move through, and that just makes everything around you so much more challenging to navigate too. Which brings me to one of the things that you mentioned was the sensory. So sensory sensitivity, it sounds from what you shared that there's both the reduction in sensory overload because your family is healing as a whole, but that you're also having reduced sensory sensitivity in other circumstances that aren't necessarily changing, and that homeopathy has helped with that. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I think it is definitely lightened the influence that type of stimulation has, and it's given me the clear-headedness to develop the skills to know when, despite everything, maybe I'm to the point where I am getting overstimmed, and instead of flailing or not acting, like, I'm going to step out of this situation for a bit.
Did you ever do any self-stimulatory behaviors as a response to the sensory overload?
I think I do. I think I'm not conscious of them nearly as much. Nothing too radical, but Lori could probably tell you more about them because she, you know, she sees them. It's hard to see them.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you're,
so you're probably not really aware. We'd have to ask.
Yeah. I'm more aware now because Lori has pointed them out, and she'll call me out. You know, she'll be like, I know that you are this because I'm seeing your tells or your, you know, yeah. your signs type of thing. But there are things. Yeah.
And has homeopathy helped with the stimming, with any of the stimming that you've done?
Yeah. You know, the self-stimming thing has never been a big thing for me. I don't think it's always been pretty subtle.
Okay.
Again, one of those things that I think has kept it hidden from the outside world. Like, I think people that stim more drastically, you know, mm-hmm. it's, you know, something visual that people can see and,
yeah.
And
people, like, people can mask their stimming too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I think, yeah, that's definitely like a social coping mechanisms people come up with. It's just another version of the mask that they develop, right? To hide, camouflaged within this neurotypical world.
Yeah. Rob, I'm curious if homeopathy, because I'm listening to you talk and it seems like your mind is a little bit clearer, you feel a little bit less overwhelmed. Has homeopathy helped you kind of in relationships, deepen relationships? And I asked this question specifically because this is something that I've been asked from families before, is does homeopathy have the ability to help with, you know, social interactions, reading social cues, the way that my child's interacting with people and the way that their relationships are? So I'm just curious if you feel like homeopathy has helped with that.
Oh, I would say absolutely. I've never been closer with Lori and the kids than I am today. And I have no confusion about the fact that homeopathy played a huge role in providing that opportunity for me. You know, I had to put in the work and I had to work on tools and things of that nature, but homeopathy really paved the way for me to be even able to do those types of things, right? You know, I'm always going to be wired this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to grips with that part of it. But how I relate to those people around me is what has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still do, you know, as far as they're concerned, I still do very quirky things sometimes, or very, you know, sometimes very backwards things, or as Lori would tell me, sometimes you have to work, you do things twice as hard as you need to do them because of how I choose to, you know, you give me a task and I do it a certain way and it may be more labor intensive or more have to do more repetitions to get it done or whatever. But just in general, I would say most certainly the fact that my head is clear now the vast majority of the time is what takes away so many of the barriers that were there before that impeded my ability to relate to other people and to develop more, you know, intimate relationships and to be more empathetic and to be more understanding and to be able to relate to people better. So it feels like veils have been lifted. You know what I mean? I was able to see before, but now I just see so much more clearly than I did
before.
And that opens up so many other things. Just having the sludge, the molasses, all that kind of stuff peeled away now for the most part, just makes it so much easier to do the things and to relate to people in ways that I've always wanted to and just wasn't able to consistently because of those barriers.
I like how you just said the veil has been lifted because it gives me this really strong visual of seeing what's happening, but not able to really understand the specific nuance and detail about what's happening because there's something that's shading it. And so if you're only seeing shadows of what's happening, that homeopathy lifted the veil. So instead of seeing a shadow of somebody, chopping wood, or it looks like they're you know doing something or whatever, and then you find out that they're doing a completely different thing, and so you can interpret it and respond differently because you have a clearer understanding of what's happening. It just that gave me actually a really good visual for understanding a little bit more about the experience of somebody who's on the spectrum. So my next thing that it comes up a lot with, especially people who are on the more severe side. So I don't know how much of this you can actually relate to. And if you can't, that's fine. We'll move on. But a lot of kids with autism end up with like repetitive thoughts, repetitive behaviors, whether it's stimming or otherwise, and like sometimes even the repetitive behaviors can be self-injury. So I don't know if you've had any of those things that you've experienced, and if homeopathy has helped with those. I mean, I've seen it help other people, but obviously we're here to hear your personal experience of what the change has been.
I would say not really. I don't know how helpful I'll be able to be in that regard. One thing I will say is, you know, at some of my lowest points, there has been the thoughts of injuring myself and things like that. Very rare and not often, but you know, when you feel like you're deep in a hole and there's you don't see how you're going to climb out, and your brain can't wrap itself around, like, I so want to change this, but I have no idea how to. That's where I was before a lot of the times. At my worst, it was one of those where I don't want this to be happening, but my brain couldn't figure out what was a clear path out.
Yeah. Well, like you said, if you're looking at everything through the veil and you're trying so hard to make the right decision and do the right thing because you're a good person and you want to, and you you care about the people around you and everything, and you keep doing things and it keeps not working and it keeps not being the right thing. And as you said before, I mean, like you said that you felt like you all come from a slightly broken place. Like, nobody's broken. You're perfect exactly as you are. It's just that you're trying to fit into something that wasn't built with you in mind, right? And so it's not surprising to hear that a lot of people do go to those places when they are legitimately trying really hard to do the right thing, and they think they're doing the right thing, and they're doing the best that they really can, the best that they know how, and it's just not having the impact they expect. And then
it's a really hard thing to deal with, to have the internal part of you, your intentions are genuinely good.
Yeah.
But then to have the end result outside of you be the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
It's really hard to understand how that is, let alone try to figure out how to make that different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it leaves you, the intention and the essence of it and everything is good and pure and wanting to be beneficial or helpful and all that, and then to find the end result, you know, just covered in excrement basically at the end of it, you know what I mean? How did it happen? Like, how do I keep finding myself in this position where I'm not trying to hurt anyone? That's the last thing I'm trying to do. But that is what's happening. You know, that can be, you rack your brain to try to figure out, like, how does this keep happening?
Yeah.
Like, and your brain's not giving you any answers.
Well, because it's always doing the best that it can.
Yeah,
it gave you the best answer it had, and it just
answers, and you're like, I see the end result that I'm looking for. Like, I can envision it, but every time I try to execute it, it feels like it goes off the rails.
Yeah.
And that can be, you know, especially when it's to the people that you really care about, right? Mm-hmm. When that kind of stuff happens. And it can really bring you to a bad place. You know, you feel trapped, and you don't see any exit doors anywhere. You know what I mean? Out of this bad place. And you're struggling, and you want so badly to have it go differently, but you can't even figure out, like, I don't even know how I would even start to change this because my brain is not giving me any other options, right?
Yeah. I'm so thankful that you've got better options now, though, that like your brain.
And at the worst, it feels like you're like, well, I can't even trust what my brain's telling me, because I trust my intuition, and what my brain tells me to do puts me in this horrible spot. So you have a lot of self-doubt, you know, and it's hard to live life going against your instinct all the time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just do the opposite of what you think you should do. And, you know, you know, try living your life consistently like that. And you find that that's really hard to do, you know?
Yeah. Rob, what about one thing that we hear a lot from families with kiddos with autism is that their kid has anxiety or depression, and they have a lot of concerns about, you know, whether homeopathy will be able to help with that. Is that something that you went through? And
oh, absolutely. You know, and it's hard to say how much was nature versus nurture, right? Like how much of it was the anxiety and the depression and stuff were already going to be there, and how much of it was caused by some of the stuff we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Like, is it really that hard to understand why someone in that position would feel anxious all the time, knowing that your intuition turns out to be wrong, you know, so often, and go horribly the opposite of what you were trying to do from a positivity standpoint, and that now you're trying to navigate in the world and figure out how to not, like, you know, step on everybody's toes all the time and cause, you know, cause negative things to happen despite all your best intentions. Like, I totally understand how that just would cause just a baseline of anxiety, because everything is rife with choices that you have to try to make, and you're barely trusting your brain to make the right choices, but you got to decide something. You got to do something, you know, and that's where the masks come in. That's where, you know, the avoidance, you know, societal, you know, avoiding social situations, avoiding things that could lead to pitfalls where, you know, your brain might tell you to do the opposite of what was the right thing to do and everything, to put yourself in precarious positions. So yeah, walking around anxious is just, I just think is something. I'm less anxious than I used to be, but I don't know if I'm ever going to completely rid myself of that anxiety, because I'm not going to change how my brain's wired. So again, I think a lot of it comes down to acceptance, you know, and also with that acceptance comes, well, maybe I should ask about this. This may sound like a stupid question, but maybe I should just ask this question and get the answer to it. You know, that's one thing Lori and I have developed is, you know, I ask her a lot of questions. And a lot of times in the beginning, they to her probably seemed like some of the most obvious answers ever, right, to some of my questions. But she learned to understand that they weren't obvious to me, and that the fact that I was going out of my way, you know, to ask these questions so that, because I did want to understand and I did want to know and I did want to do things, you know, in a way that was going to have a much more positive outcome, that the asking of those questions was the lesser of the evils of, you know, and however that, how annoying that might be for her to, you know, and I may have to ask the same question several times, you know, before I really, it really sinks in or whatever, but that was easily a much better choice than, you know, making unilateral decisions on my own when I didn't have the capacity to do it.
Yeah.
Clearly and you know, with full awareness and full understanding.
So if I go back and summarize all of these things, just we're hearing that through homeopathy and therapy, that the two together, that you have reduced your irritability substantially, that you both have a higher threshold for reaching a point of irritability and the better ability to access choice about how to respond in it, that you have improved sensory overload and like reactivity to sensory stimuli, You have better understanding of social cues that you, like, as you said, the veil is lifted, so you can understand more what's happening and engage in a way that works better for you, and where you're understanding more what people's intentions are and how they're responding to you as well. That you still have a little bit of anxiety that you're carrying around. I'm hopeful that you will actually be able to have some relief from that fully at some point. Though we all have, like part of being human is having irritability sometimes, and sadness sometimes, and anxiety sometimes. But that there's substantially less anxiety about what you're doing, and like how, like whether what you want to do is the right thing to do or not. That there's, you're finding ways when you're really unsure to navigate it. So the anxiety is lower. It sounds like the isolation and sadness is lower too. Am I missing anything that homeopathy has helped you with?
No, I mean, you summed it up pretty nicely. You must listen to people and say things back to them quite a bit.
How could I miss the biggest one, that your thinking is more clear, and so much of it
stems from that, for sure.
Yes.
Being in a place to be capable of doing all those things is the basis, I think, for it all.
Yeah. Right?
And that's
your first sign that you need an adjustment, is when you get sludge brain back, yeah, or a lot of molasses times, yes. brain.
A lot yeah. of times that is one of the key ones that, mm-hmm. that I focus in on, for sure.
Yeah.
Rob, switching back to homeopathy and your healing journey, was there anything about homeopathy or using homeopathy yourself that was really challenging for you?
Yeah. One part of it is, for people like myself, routine is a really close, dear friend, you know, in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on the homeopathy journey, nothing ever stays the same for long, as far as what remedy you're on, what potency you're on. Are you doing double dilute with a teaspoon, water dosing? Are you taking pellets? Are you dosing every day? Or is it spaced out and take it as you need it? So there are parts of that are certainly much, you know, I am so much better when I'm in a situation, you know, in a situation on the journey where I'm taking it, I just dose every day. Gotcha. Check. I can totally do that. When it's one of those where we're still trying to figure out a cadence or something to the remedy, like, well, dose as you need it. You know, that's where I can potentially fall into a pitfall, right? Because then I have to be really aware and really paying attention to how am I feeling right now? You know, is how I'm feeling something that's just, you know, from the external world that, you know, it was a rough day at work today. I got beat up pretty bad at work today. Or is it coming from inside of me, and I'm losing that level of support that I had from the remedy, and I need to dose again. And it's things like that that can make it tough. And, you know, I've certainly had episodes where I waited too long, or maybe, you know, I'm constantly being told, like, err on the side of being aggressive, because I have a tendency to wait too long rather than to go too early. So there's been a few rare instances where I think I've agged myself, because I'm like, you know what? I feel like 3% less today, so I'm going to head this off of the path. I'm going to take my remedy. And then I find out that I'm, you know, agging for the next 12 hours or something like that. So that can certainly be difficult at times.
Yeah. Well, let's just wrap it up with thinking about the people who are listening who might be an adult who is questioning if they perhaps are on the spectrum. We're getting a lot more adults who are recognizing, especially those who, you know, were born in the same generation that we are, and that, like, there was just not as much awareness and a lot more masking. And as we talked about in the last episode too, a lot of us, you know, hanging out until the streetlights were on, drinking out of hoses, and just not as supervised, let's say that. So what advice would you offer to those people who might be in the same boat as you, as an adult, wondering what's wrong with them, or what's wrong with the world, or why won't things work? What would you recommend or advise them?
I mean, I would say, don't be afraid to find out. You know, there, nowadays you go down to the bookstore and find probably 50 books on autism, you know, I've read several of them, but it's not even, you know, to just find online, hey, answer this 50 question quiz, you know what I mean? And it'll tell you like, yeah, hey, maybe you might be on the spectrum. You know what I mean? Like that, taking that step could start, be the first step or two on the journey to being in a much better place. So if you do wonder about that, if you do feel like you have those awkward moments that nobody else seems to have, or you know, you put your foot in it every once in a while and you can't understand why, or you know, whatever it is, take a look, find out. And then what if it is, if that is indeed the case for you, you've got some choices you can make, and you've got some resources that you can utilize, and you've got homeopathy, you've got a therapist, you've got self-help books, you've got online community, you know, communities that you can go to where like-minded people that have the same experience as you can help support you and tell your story and all that kind of stuff. So the first, you know, it's a pretty cliched saying, but you know, the first step or two is usually the most difficult one. But once you take that first go, who knows, you may find that it's the most relieving thing you've ever experienced, putting a name to it and knowing that you're not, you know, one person, you're one of thousands or millions of people that have similar experiences as you, similar thoughts as you, similar, you know, issues as you, similar, you know, interests as you. That can open a lot of doors. And then once you get going with that, it can really snowball in a really good way and get you to a much better place.
It seems like it has been really empowering for you and really transformative in your life. And I have a couple of adult friends and acquaintances, even here locally, that have been diagnosed in their 40s. And some people feel like it would be a devastating thing, but for most people, it's freeing and uplifting to just know.
What's devastating is feeling different your whole life and not being able to understand why. That can be devastating, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So putting a name to it, to me, and I think for most people, I would think would be, very freeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Almost like self-discovery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool. Rob, what advice would you offer to parents with children with autism?
I would say do what you can to find a way to meet them in the middle. You're never going to be able to play in their sandbox, you know, of autism and how their brain works, but you can meet them partway. At least in a lot of cases, you know, if someone's, you know, way down the spectrum, that may not be possible, but for the rest of us that are somewhere, you know, in the middle or just off of center, you know, it's a diplomatic thing to come and let's meet each other somewhere between the two places where we are originally from, because I'm never going to fully understand what it's like to be neurotypical. Like you guys are all pretty weird sometimes. You know what I mean? Like you guys do some really crazy stuff, you know, and the same, you know, we're the one in whatever the stat is now, 68, you know, kids in America or whatever. We're certainly the minority, which makes us unique in that sense. But a neurotypical person is never fully going to understand what it's like to be neurodiverse. And so finding a way to like meet at a third party location, right, where you can be like, hi, I'm neurodiverse and this is what I'm all about. Hey, I'm neurotypical and this is what I'm all about. And finding that middle ground where you can start to relate to the other person and find out what makes them tick. What do they need? What do they want? Because it's not going to be the same as you. A neurodiverse person is going to have a lot of different needs and wants than a neurotypical person is. And if you try to fit them in a neurotypical box, it's not going to go well. You know? Yeah. So find ways to help them live in your world. Because that's what they're facing for the rest of their life. There's not some country or island where neurodiverse people go to all be amongst themselves and apart from everyone else. We have to navigate the world that we're in, and we just happen to be the minority. And so you got to learn how to live in the neurotypical world and still try to stay true to yourself at the same time.
So I have this question that just popped into my mind, and I hope I don't regret asking this.
Okay.
Given where you are now with what you know about yourself and what homeopathy has brought to you, if you were able to make yourself through some medication that doesn't exist yet, if they were, if they brought about a medication that could make somebody, quote, you know, neurotypical, that could change your neurodiversity status, knowing what you know now of yourself, the things you've learned, and what you have with homeopathy, would you take that drug? Or are you?
No, I don't think I would. Because, you know, like they say that, you know, people say that they wouldn't go back and change the bad things that happened to them in their life because those are part of the things that make them who they are today. And they would be a different person if they wouldn't have had those things. You know, who's to say that I would be married to Lori and have these two wonderful kids and have the quality friendships that I do in my life if I wasn't neurodiverse? I'd be a different person. Maybe they wouldn't like me anymore. Maybe I wouldn't be able to relate to them like I do now. So no, I don't think I would. You know, and there are definitely times where I really love and appreciate the superpowers that neurodiversity has given me. Like, you know, I've thought about it, and, you know, being neurodiverse is kind of like being Superman. You have some really strong strengths, but you definitely, kryptonite is, you know, a huge weakness for Superman. And I have my kryptonites too, but I wouldn't change being Superman just because kryptonite can harm me, you know?
And you got, and the way I always describe homeopathy and what it's able to do in neurodiversity, both in autism and ADHD, and any other thing, any other thing that we see that is just like a different way that somebody is wired, is that it helps amplify the superhero strengths, so the superpower components, and minimize the kryptonite. Or like give a little bit more protection from the kryptonite, which I've never used that specific phrasing before because you brought that the Superman and kryptonite, but that it can help enhance the good parts and the real advantages that come with their particular flavor of neurospiciness, and it can help reduce the impact of the challenges.
Yeah. You know, in a lot of ways, it's made me a much more optimal version of myself. For sure.
Well, I'm glad I asked then, because I was like, oh my gosh, if he tells me that he was like, yep, give me that drug any day, I want to be neurotypical.
Cut the feed.
Yes. I feel like, all right, edit that out. Yeah. No, I wouldn't edit it out because I do want to have your honest experience, you know, but I think it's really just important for people to hear that, you know, especially for people who maybe have children who are on the more impaired side than you are, that there are still really good things about your experience and the way that you're wired that that you wouldn't want to change.
You know, and for those parents and stuff that have those types of situations, you know, that kid can be an opportunity for you to become a better version of yourself. You know, they will teach you more about yourself than you could probably ever on your own. I mean, they're gonna hold up a mirror in front of you, and you're gonna see who you are and who you could be, and sometimes the worst versions of yourself. And that'll give you an opportunity to change if you need to relate to people better, be kinder, you know, be more empathetic. There's a lot of good that can come out of that.
We all have a lot of adapting to do to all work together and to celebrate all ranges of the ways that our brains are wired, because they all bring really important things to the world. So, and I know for any parents who are listening who have kids on the spectrum who are on the more severe side, I realize that some of the things that Rob shared with us today are not going to be accessible to you. And that the point is, of this conversation is not necessarily to say everybody who has autism and everybody who's on the spectrum is going to be able to reach the same point that you're at, Rob. And I'm at the same time very grateful to hear all of the ways that homeopathy in particular has helped you, and to just give us a little bit more of a framework for what your experience has been like, so that we can understand it, and just a little bit more than I think. I mean, I'm leaving with a better understanding of some aspects of it than I had before we started this conversation. So I'm really grateful for your vulnerability and your willingness to come and share about your experience, and the good, the bad, the opportunities to learn, the wonderful things that have come about as a result of all of this. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Hopefully, if I can help one person out there, you know, by hearing this, then it's all been worth it. So I'm happy to be here and do what I can.
All right.
Well, I'm your one.
Sorry, what was that, Jody?
I said, I'm your one.
I was going to say, like, you already got two here that, like, you gave us an enhanced perspective and enhanced understanding will just help us as we navigate things in the world, and as we navigate helping parents who are dealing with both PANS and autism, or that question of, is it PANS or is it autism? And so thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, everybody.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for PANS and PANDAS, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for PANS and PANDAS throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care, and remember, this won't be forever.